The United States of America Department of Agriculture appears to have conducted a decade-long campaign of bureaucratic terror throughout Montana and North Dakota family food sector. And so today we pause to ask, is the U.S. Department of Agriculture deliberately killing off family businesses?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,121st edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Todos Santos who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Jason, question for the day.
Fire away.
Do you think the federal government would organize itself so as to be able to kill off family businesses?
Kill off family businesses. Well, if we follow the money, where does the money come from? Do family businesses?
Do you think the government would do that?
I think it's possible.
You think it's possible? Well, Kelsey McCann, what do you think?
I think after reading this story that we're about to cover today, we might have a situation brewing.
Sarah Bell Lynn.
Something does smell kind of fishy, so I'm excited to explore this issue a little bit further.
Away we go. Folks, Bart Riley is the third generation proprietor of Riley Meats, a processor of specialty meats in Butte, Montana. Riley Meats is the quintessential family business, big enough to provide a good living to the Riley family, but not big enough to require multiple employees and the headaches and stress thereof. As the Riley family's specialty meats are sold to restaurants and individuals throughout the West, the business is subject to the governance of the United States Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service. For 36 years, inspectors found little or no fault with the Riley Meats facility, but then one day a new inspector arrived on the scene, bringing with him a 12-year reign of bureaucratic terror. When Bart Riley resisted this terror, he discovered his family business was but one of many being subjected to this terrorism by the USDA. The story of this apparent campaign of bureaucratic terrorism was picked up by David McCumber, who is the editor of the Montana Standard newspaper, whose two-part series, Through the Meat Grinder, may be accessed via the links posted at metrofarm.com. Suggest you pick it up, click on the links, read this story. After reading it myself, I thought there's something that needs to be addressed here. And so today we ask, is USDA deliberately killing off family food businesses? And if not, how do you explain the story we are about to tell you? We're going to start today with the people who really know the story inside and out. We'll start with David McCumber, who is the editor of the Montana Standard. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Good. Yeah, you have a voice for radio. What are you doing in newspaper?
A face made for radio anyway.
Okay. Well, David, tough question for you, but you might be able to answer it. How would you describe Butte, Montana to someone from Camden, New Jersey?
Well, Butte is, first of all, at about 5,600 feet elevation. We're a little over a mile high. We're right on the Continental Divide. Butte has been, it's known as the richest hill. It's been known as a mining center for more than 100 years. 100 years ago this year, Butte's population was close to 100,000. It has a legacy of environmental issues from 100 years of mining, 100 plus years, but it also has a healthy ongoing copper and moly and silver mine here now, and it has a lot of great small businesses.
Great, and with that,
one of which is
Riley Meats, right?
That's correct.
Well, and with that, let's pick up Bart Riley, who is the proprietor of Riley Meats. Bart, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, thanks.
Good to have you, Bart. Now, how would you describe Butte to somebody from Camden, New Jersey, Bart?
It's one of the greatest places to live.
Okay.
It's a small town, and everybody knows everybody. It's really nice to live here.
Well, here's how I would describe Butte. I would describe Butte as a city that has more character per square foot than any other city in the world I know of, and I know a few. That character was baked into the city by the Hard Rock men and women who took the richest hill on earth and through their incredibly hard work and even incredibly harder play, turned that wealth into America. And that's why the big little city is often called simply Butte, America. Just my opinion. Let's start with a story, and let's go to, first of all, I guess, paper in the today's paper, Montana Standard, story about Bart Riley's birthday party at Riley Meats yesterday. Had a congressman show up, right, Bart?
Yep, Greg Gianforte showed up.
What for?
He said he's going to help us. He was shocked at all the stuff I showed him in the shop, and he apologized on behalf of the federal government for how they have treated me and my family and all the other plants in Montana.
Well, this from David McCumber's piece in today's Montana Standard. A quick read here. Friday, Riley showed Gianforte a large stack of NRs, non-compliance reports, filed against his plant by FSIS inspectors on Jeffrey Legg's orders. Many were later rescinded. He also showed Gianforte a letter from an FSIS official informing Riley that at least six allegations of the agency's willful harassment and intentional acts to, get this, intimidate, coerce, or torment Riley had been investigated and found to be true. The letter went on to say that no disciplinary action would be taken by the agency. So, Bart Riley, what I'm getting here is that the federal government, in the form of the USDA's FSIS, has been, how did they put it, intimidating you, coercing you, and tormenting you for over 12 years. And it's okay. They're not going to do a thing about it. Did I read that right?
That's exactly right. And that's the whole problem I've had is they all think whatever Dr. Legg does to me or other plants, it's okay. And they just continually protect him no matter what he does. He has no problems ever with it. They never do anything to him. Even when you prove over time and time and time that he's wrong and he broke a regulation and he lied and he did everything to us, they protect him no matter what.
Has it ever occurred to you, Bart Riley, that he was doing that at the behest of the USDA?
Oh, I've said that for years, because at first I thought it was just him, you know, and I thought, well, I'm going to complain and we're going to get to the bottom of this, and nobody's going to put up with, you know, he's just one rogue inspector, he'll be gone. It didn't ever happen. It's definitely the USDA came here, in my opinion, to put us all out of business, because Montana's so spread out, and they need so many inspectors, because the plants are so far apart. They just wanted us all gone, and he came up to every plant with the same different lists of everything was really expensive to do when he first came here.
Okay, hold that thought for a minute. Let's go to David McCumber, whose work brought this story to light. David, first of all, we have decided to award you for this series of articles, the Food Chain Journalist of the Year Award. You may use it for any year you want, but you deserve it. And also, it's worth at least three Pulitzers and two Nobels. So it's worth a lot. So I just wanted to say, really, congratulations for picking up this story, because it's incredible. When did you have your epiphany that, oh my goodness, there is a story here that needs to be told?
Well, it didn't take long. I heard, as Bart said, Butte's a small town. We all, you know, everybody knows everybody. And a mutual friend of ours, a guy named Ron Davis, who runs radio stations here, actually, told me, you know, Bart's having some real difficulty. He's got an amazing story to tell. And so I thought, boy, that doesn't sound good. I went down and talked to Bart. And you know what they say in this business, if your mama tells you she loves you, check it out. And so Bart told me this amazing story of a 12-year pattern of governmental abuse. Basically, this inspector was using non-existent regulations.
Okay, good. Hold down thought. We have to take a quick break. Okay. This is a commercial radio show, so that's what we do. So Great. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're going to hear the most incredible story of government-sponsored terrorism against a family business. Grab your cup of coffee and stay tuned. We will be right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I'll tell you what's eating me right now is the fact that I think the USDA is deliberately targeting family businesses in the attempt to put them out of business. Now, I might be wrong, just a personal opinion, but somebody please tell me I'm wrong and tell me why I'm thinking wrong here. But first, read The Meat Grinder, a series of two newspaper articles in the Montana Standard by David McCumber. You can find the links at metrofarm.com. Read that story and let me know what you think. Kelsey, you just read the story. What do you think?
I have to say my mind is just, it's almost stuck. I can't get my head around why this would be happening. And Bart, after having read this story and being a firm believer in the beauty of having a family-run and family-owned business for as many years as you have, I'm just truly fascinated by your constitution because it takes a certain kind of person to fight the federal government for 12 years. And I mean, you are harassed. Your family was harassed. This is, it gives me horrible goosebumps. Not the good kind, but it's terrifying.
Yeah, it is terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Sarah Bell, you scanned the article.
I did, and I have to say I agree with Kelsey. I can't believe what I'm seeing and also what I'm hearing, and I feel for you.
David McCumber, the principal agent of all of this is a guy named Jeffrey Legg.
Yeah, as I said, when I heard about this, it's really strained belief, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I checked it out, everything that Bart told me that had happened turned out to be exactly accurate. And this guy Jeffrey Legg came into Bart's shop and looked around and suddenly gave him a list of all these things he had to do to comply supposedly with federal regulations and continue to be federally inspected. And so Bart started to do them, to build the inspector an office and replace wooden pallets and various things like that. And then come to find out, none of it was in the federal regulations. All of it was basically made up on the spot by this guy.
Well, you know, the thing that in the, when I first read your piece, the first thing that struck me was that this Jeffrey Legg guy was, you know, has impressive credentials working throughout North Dakota, got promoted to regional headquarters as deputy district manager, and then all of a sudden he goes back into the field to inspect, to be in charge of inspecting Montana and Wyoming. And so when you see somebody who gets promoted, you know, to district manager or big cheese or big mucky muck, and all of a sudden is back with a little mucky mucks, you think either he's a total incompetent or he's on a special mission.
Great white shark.
Yeah. So when I read that, I thought, that's interesting. And so he goes back to the field. Bart Riley, this guy comes into your office and he's giving you directives. And there's, tell us about the office he wanted built for himself and his inspectors.
Well, he claims, and it's not just me, he's done it to other plants, and he did it to another plant in Bozeman, Montana, just last year. He'd tell everybody they have to have an office with a locking door for the inspectors, and that's not a requirement. It's only required in the slaughter plant, and we're all processing plants, so it's not even a regulation. And when he told me I had to do the locking door, and I said, well, I steam clean these floors every night. How am I supposed to wash the office? And he said, well, you're going to have to do it during the day when we're here so you can clean it. Well, I'm not going to stop what I'm doing at work to clean their office.
But it was not just an office he wanted to have built. It was almost everything he requested was as being a regulation, was regulation.
Yeah, I have these carts. They're a four-wheel cart. They're about 3x5 platform with a handle on them, and it's a wooden frame with metal over the top of them. And he looked at them, and there's four of them, and he said, those are unacceptable. They're against regulation. And I said, we don't cut anything on them. You haul boxed meat out to the trucks to load to deliver. And he said, I don't care what you do with them. You got to get rid of them and buy stainless steel ones. So I looked up stainless steel carts that were like half the size of the ones I have. And they were $2,500 a piece. So that would have been $10,000 right there. And I said, I'm not doing that. And then he went in our basement of an old building and didn't like the basement and told me I had to redo all kinds of the wooden floors, and he didn't like the walls. He didn't like the open floor joists. We don't cut meat in the basement. The building was built in the early 1900s. It's just brick and wood. It has nothing to do with it. We had wooden pallets in the freezers and coolers. All the meat comes in on them. He said that was against regulation. No wooden pallets were even allowed in the building. He told me I had to buy plastic ones, and when the semis brought the meat, I had to take the plastic ones out on the sidewalk and transfer everything on the sidewalk and bring it in on plastic pallets. Well, that's not a regulation.
You know, the guy's job is to ensure food safety, right? That's what his job is. Are you certain that the regulations that he was suggesting to you were not related to food safety?
Yeah, I'm positive. His none of what he's been doing is related to food safety. And then, like, the wooden, all of this stuff that he gave me a list of, then when I found out it was not regulation, and the governor and the senators at the time had a thing called a listening session in Butte, and we all had to go there, and somebody had to be the spokesperson for the Montana plants, and I volunteered because nobody wanted to do it because they said whoever do it might get retaliated against. So I brought up the wooden pallets and the carts. Oh, and he said that there was no way you could do wild game.
In Montana?
He said that unless you took a 120-day suspension, he said, I don't think you could keep a place clean enough. Well, we've been doing wild game for 25 years before he got there, and I never had any trouble with the USDA. We clean it really good and work late at night. So I stand up in front of everybody and tell all this stuff, and his bosses all say, no, that's not a regulation. You don't need to worry about wooden pallets. No, you can cut wild game. No, there's no plastic pallets required. They're not allowed in your basement. That's not a regulation. He don't have the right to go down there.
So everything he's been telling you, he now admits to being false, right there in the public hearing, standing up before the governor and the senators and all these mucky mucks. He says, no, you don't need to do that.
No, he didn't. He sat there and his bosses said he was wrong.
Oh.
This Bill Smith is the one that was telling us all this. So we thought, well, this is good. Now we got it out in the open and everything will be fine.
And
that was a mistake.
So his boss knows exactly what he's doing.
Yep.
And his boss says to all the mucky mucks in the public hearing that this what he's doing is not correct.
Right.
And so that's the end of that, right?
Yeah, that was the end of it until the next day, and it just started all over again. That was in the month of September, and then in December, I got my freezer shut down with NRs for having wooden pallets after they were told that we could have wooden pallets. And they tagged up a wooden pallet that had Daly's Bacon from Missoula, Montana on it. And Daly's Bacon is owned by Seaboard Farms, who's the largest pork producer in the world. And it came from there, and that's under Legg's jurisdiction, too. So I called Daly's Bacon because the guy that's the boss down there is a friend of mine, and asked him what Legg did when he was there and if he said anything about the wooden pallets. And the guy said, nope. He said, we have over 500 wooden pallets in the plant every day. Legg never said anything about them.
But they're owned by the big boys, and so they can do what they want. When we come back, I'm going to ask David McCumber how this story unfolded for him and what he found when he started looking around in other places in Montana and Wyoming and North Dakota. Folks, do you think the federal government would organize itself in such a way so as to kill off family businesses? And if you don't think that, how do you find what's happening in this story? This is The Food Chain. I will be right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, the United States Department of Agriculture appears to have conducted a decade-long campaign of bureaucratic terror throughout Montana, North Dakota's family food sector. And so today we are pausing to ask, is the USDA deliberately killing off family food businesses? And if not, how then do you define what's going on in this story? As outlined by David McCumber in the Montana Standard in a short series of articles entitled The Meat Grinder, you can find the links at metrofarm.com right there on the front cover. Click on those links, read this story. You will be absolutely blown away by what the federal government is doing to family businesses here in the United States of America. David McCumber, you started to peel this onion, and you found that it had lots of layers, right?
Well, I did. Obviously, I filed a Freedom of Information Act with the federal government, which is always a rather time-consuming process. And was disappointed that much of what I asked for I didn't get. In particular, I was interested in the investigators' reports of the people who investigated Bart's complaints about Jeffrey Legg, and they withheld those reports. And I have some confidence that indeed the reports. Well, we know from the one letter that Bart referenced earlier that many of the allegations or the complaints that Bart filed were found to be substantiated. But I wasn't able to get the detail on that. And Bart filed several subsequent complaints, and I wasn't able to get the investigator's reports on those complaints. So, I began talking to inspectors who had worked for Legg, and I actually found a really great, courageous inspector, a guy who was a federal meat inspector for 37 years and worked the last 9 years of his career under Jeff Legg. And so he knew the right way to go about the business, and he knew the other way, and he he explained to me what Leg had done not only with Bart, but in other plants around Montana. And so I began to find plants, you know, it wasn't only existing businesses, but it was businesses that were trying to expand and get into federal inspection, and they were basically prevented from doing so by these huge laundry lists of expensive modifications that they would have to make according to Leg in order to qualify for federal inspection. And in the process, he killed a couple of businesses, he at least a couple that I know of, and he became known as the Dream Crusher for that
perfect name for a bureaucrat, Dream Crusher. Yeah. Wow. Did he not also tell Rick Toot that Riley Meats must go?
Yes, he did. At first, I assumed that what we had here was a...
errant.
Renegade.
Yeah. Renegade
bureaucrat.
Yeah. Renegade bureaucrat.
And somebody who was just out there freelancing on his own. And, it did seem odd that he was protected as well as he was, but I thought, well, maybe this is somebody who has somebody influential in the agency who's got his back. But, you know, one of the interesting things that's happened since the stories have run is that I've received phone calls from meat producers and plant operators in other states who are saying, you know, the same thing's happening here. We've been besieged by fake regulations and by this sort of activity, and so it does seem that somewhere along the line this is policy. It may be unwritten policy, but it seems like this is policy at some level in FSIS to get these small producers off of federal inspection.
Bart Riley, 12 years of bureaucratic terrorism. How on earth did you and your family survive?
There are some times I didn't know if we were going to. It was hard. Because you go there every day and don't know if he's going to shut you down or what they're going to do to you. It was bad. Like my kids, they don't like it at all. They don't like the place anymore. I was hoping they'd take it over. My boy doesn't want anything to do with it.
So he succeeded, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's what they wanted. And one thing when you were talking about that complaint where they addressed it, I filed that formal complaint on May 29th of 06, and I finally got that answer after numerous letters and calls and arguing with them. They answered that complaint from May 29th of 06. They answered it on October 1st of 2008. And the first paragraph, it says in here, I apologize for my failure to respond to your inquiry in a timely manner. 2.5 years later, and they apologize for not doing it in a timely manner. They just try to drag everything out, so they were hoping I'd go broke and go away.
Well, how in the hell did you survive? I mean, I introduced the show by telling the world that Butte was made from hard rock men and women. You must be the hardest rock of all.
I'm a stubborn Irishman. I don't give up.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that Jeffrey Legg didn't reckon with running into Bart Riley.
Yeah, or Butte, Montana. So a deliberate, they confessed to this. This is a deliberate campaign. They know they are doing wrong, and have admitted to it. And that's how your byline read on the first article, David, that the feds admit to this, but that's okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So this is not going on just with Bart Riley and Riley Meats. This is something that's going on throughout what appears to be a big chunk of America then. If you have a big company, if you're the biggest pork producer in the world, you can use whatever kind of pallets you want. That's just fine. But if you send those pallets to Riley Meats in Butte, Montana, we're going to write up that Riley Meats company and shut it down. Bart?
Yep. That's what they that's how I look at it. They just want the big places, and they want the rest of us gone. And they'll make up regulations or do whatever they got to you to get rid of us.
This is extraordinary. Now,
this
we're,
is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable, and it's still going on. I guess they're probably laying pretty low right now after your articles, David.
Well, I told Bart that I thought, this heat's the best disinfectant, as he knows in his business, and the kind of heat that we, heat and light that we can provide as journalists is a pretty good disinfectant for a government. And I honestly believe this is the best inoculation against further harassment is to bring it out in the public so that people know about it. And I've been gratified at the response, not only from our congressional delegation, all of whom are...
We're going to have to take a quick break, but I'd like to bring back that notion of what happened to the bureaucracy when Bart first stood up to it. Do stay tuned, folks, right back. Do you think the federal government would organize itself so as to kill off family businesses? Do you think it's possible? If not, how do you explain this story?
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place off Guadalcanal, September 1942.
I heard Mr. Schaefer say there's a splash up forward, then the fireworks began. The Wasp was forward of us when three torpedoes hit her amidships starboard side. She started blazing and the smoke was pouring out of her up forward. The destroyer O'Brien intercepted a torpedo meant for the Wasp. We tried to take a torpedo as well, but it went right under our bow and hit the North Carolina. I ran after a life jacket and a tin hat. When I returned, the Wasp was down by the bow in a mass of flames. While the whole fleet was swinging around, we dropped two 600-pound depth charges on a contact. All this happened in about 15 minutes, and there was no unnecessary excitement on board at all. Everyone remained calm.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, right now, what we're eating is the United States Department of Agriculture. We're going to eat it up and spit it out and maybe fire everybody that's involved in it just because of what we hear in this story today. Oh, my goodness. So, David McCumber, you're the first article that I saw on this subject. And after a dozen years of terror of small family businesses throughout the Intermountain West, you're the first person to come up with a story. What gives? Why?
Well, one of the reasons, I think, is because a lot of this has happened far from media attention, or often in places where there aren't, experienced investigative reporters, or there isn't the ability to go chase this story down. And so it just so happened that I heard about Bart's story and was able to.
And you're just down the street, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You're just down the street. Bart, what happened? Where were the mucky mucks when you started jumping up and down and complaining about this federal government agency running amok on people like you throughout the West? What happened to all of the politicians in the... and so on? Why didn't they stand up and fight for you?
That's a good question, because they did at first, and then it would die down, and then so everybody would go away. And then as soon as the heat was off of them, leg would come back and start over again. And then I'd file another complaint, and then everybody would be all over them for a while, and they'd pull leg out for a while, and then I'd think it was over, and everybody would stop investigating it, and it would all start up again. One of the PHVs told me once, he said, Bart, just file a formal complaint every 6 months and we won't have to put up with him anymore. He said it ends every time you get somebody involved, but then they just come back after you again.
So how far up the federal government food chain do you think this action, this terrorism, this dedicated terrorism, who's way up there giving direction to all of this?
It's in Washington. It's not just here. It's not in Montana. It's not just the district office, even though they're all doing it. It goes all the way up. Because the first time when it was the Minneapolis district office, and I thought, you know, we could get this resolved if I talked to somebody with a little common sense, and they had everybody come out here to a meeting in Missoula, and the deputy or the district manager at the time, I saw him at the meeting, so I thought, well, if I could talk to that guy, this will be resolved. You know, I was kind of naive, I think. So I walked up to him and put my hand out, and I said, I'm Bart Riley, and can I talk to you? And he looked at me and didn't put his hand out. He said, I know who you are. I'm not talking to you. He doesn't know who I am. He'd never met me. He's never been in my plant. And right away, he was backing legs, so he was in part of it. I've done the same thing with the Denver office. We went all the way to Al Almanza in Washington, and he don't answer emails or even try to help us, and he was in charge of all of them. So it goes right to the top of the USDA in Washington.
David, why?
Well, you know, I honestly believe that, there is a philosophy that they don't have to worry about the little guys. The little guys aren't going to fight back. And you know, that's the only thing I can see. I know that Bill Smith, who's the head of the sort of operating branch of FSIS, the Office of Field Operations, he has protected a leg right along. And I talked to a former Undersecretary of Agriculture who used to run the agency, and he said that he removed Bill Smith from that position, but he's back in it now. And he said, so why would you expect any change? And I think that that's really, really accurate.
So the mucky mucks are still there. Jeffrey Legg is still there. Everybody's sitting back at their desk with their feet up on the desk, smile on their face, waiting for this publicity to go away so they can go back and visit Riley Meats in Butte, Montana, and everybody else as well.
I think that they perhaps are going to get a little more heat this time than they have in the past. Sure looks like it, and we're going to stay on this story. We're not going to quit watching. So
how can you possibly put heat on the what do they call it these days? The swamp. Yeah. how can Bart Riley stand up for himself? How can family businesses stand up against a government, a federal government, that's out to shut them down? Because, you know, they take these bureaucrats and they move them from one office to the next, and you can never find them again. And then when you turn around, they're moved right back in the same office again, issuing NRs that make absolutely no sense. Bart, what are you going to do?
I'm going to stay going. I'm going to stay fighting until somebody does something and Dr. Legg's fired and some of the other ones, because they're all in on it.
They're all in on it, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not just one person, and I'm not going to quit like they want me to.
Wow. It's Bart Riley against the federal government of the United States of America. Hey, Bart, I've got your back, okay? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. We're going to come back for some closing remarks. But I'm curious about what you think. Do you think the federal government would really organize itself so it can kill off the family businesses of the United States of America? And if you don't think that, how do you describe what's happening to Bart Riley? Right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy it'll make you blush. Pledge 2 local bucks each day. Get 2 others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we're back. Quick question to David McCumber. David, I thought when I was putting this show together, I thought about asking USDA to join us on the program today, and then I thought, no, I know what they're going to say. And you asked them for an interview as well. What did they tell you?
I asked to interview Jeffrey Legg. I asked to interview Al Almanza, who was the head of FSIS at the time. I asked to interview Legg's direct supervisor. I was told I was refused those interviews. I then provided a list of questions for them and for Bill Smith. And they declined to answer the questions and simply gave me a one-paragraph statement, which I used in the story 3 times. But it was not. I was surprised, frankly, that they didn't want to talk about their side of the story. And I sure tried to get it.
And so they just left you hanging. You have to write your own story with whatever you can find. You found a lot. You found that Bart Riley was being terrorized by the federal government. You found that Bart Riley's Meats was not the only company to be terrorized by the federal government, but it was essentially endemic throughout the West, wherever you find isolated communities where there's a meat processor. They are being told that they must use gold-plated wooden pallets or something like that, and which essentially is telling them that you must give us $50 million worth of improvements or you cannot process meat for sale to restaurants and your friends and neighbors. Bart, that you stood up to the federal government, are you feeling that other processors are standing up behind you as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's more that need help, too. And you know, some of them were afraid to stand up, which is understandable, because I remember one guy told me, he said, I don't want to go through what you went through, so I'll just do what they say. And that's understandable, too, because if you've lived what I lived with, I can see his point.
And you've lived with a lot. It's kind of like a George Orwell novel. You know, that's what I kept ringing. You're guilty, but what am I guilty of? You're guilty, but wait, what am I guilty of? Doesn't matter. You're guilty. And they confessed to this treatment of you. They confessed to it. The federal government said, yes, we're doing this. So what? Okay. The article... Oh, go ahead, Kelsey.
Bart, I just have a question. Have you put together a website or anything that will aid you in the process of fighting the federal government? Because that's an awful lot for one man, one family, and one really brilliantly written article, 2 articles to cover. Is there a way that we can reach out to you and talk to you about what you've got going on?
No, because I'm not very good with computers. I don't have a website and stuff.
Right.
A lot of my appeals were handwritten, and it's been hard because I'm not really good with that stuff.
Well, the article by David McCumber, Through the Meat Grinder, the story of Bart Riley, Riley Meats, and everybody else throughout the Intermountain West, how the federal government organized itself to kill family businesses. Articles are posted on the homepage at metrofarm.com. Read them. And thank you, Bart. Thank you, David. And thank you all for tuning in the Food Chain Radio program.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.